TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, indeed, it is Raised by Wolves. Hello, friends. I'm Manny Hill, and on the phone with me is Dane Moore, fresh off of a flight from Chicago. Dane was in Chicago covering the Wolves and Bulls last night, and Dane, it was kind of a tale of two halves, so to speak, and Ryan Saunders basically did not hold back on that fact that he was not pleased with the way they played in the first half of that game, and certainly you credit the Wolves for getting back into the game, but when you look at where the Wolves are at and where the Bulls are at, that was certainly a game that you look at on the schedule and say that that's a game that the Wolves should come away with a victory, and they weren't able to do it last night.
Yeah, I would say particularly considering they're on a six-game losing streak and the schedule doesn't lighten up anytime soon. I mean, I just think Ryan saw something starting to slip away, and I don't mean like the playoffs slipping away. I think we've all kind of come to grips with that probably not happening this year, but there still is a whole half of a season, and for them to be throwing up white flags that like at game 45 of the year in the first half when you're playing the Bulls, like you said, I mean, that's unacceptable. And it was a completely unacceptable level of effort from pretty much everyone on the roster in the first half. I would say outside of Jarrett Culver, who I thought played hard. But Wiggins was particularly glaring in his deference in that first half. And Ryan laid into him in the locker room afterwards. And I thought it was interesting when we got to talk to the guys afterwards that Wiggins said he needed it.
And I'm it's so interesting because with Andrew, it's like, all right, he gets off to the nice start this year and he's showing signs of improvement. And, you know, we're thinking, okay, this is a different Andrew Wiggins that we're seeing. But then this happens last night and you're just like, okay, is this really the Andrew Wiggins that we're seeing now in that after a little while, he just needs sort of a kick in the pants, so to speak, to get going again. He needs somebody to get on his case again. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't know how to feel about that in now his sixth season in the NBA.
You know, Manny, so I've written two different types of stories on Andrew Wiggins this year. Is one, Andrew Wiggins, the player, has changed in the way he's being utilized. And two, Andrew Wiggins, the person, has changed. I think what we do know for a fact is true. Andrew Wiggins, the player, has changed in the way X's and O's wise, the shot selection and the type of offense and defense they're looking for him. That has changed. We know that with a bullet.
Yeah.
Number two, this month he's totally put number two back into question where we don't know who Andrew Wiggins, the person, is. I mean, again, he has this questioning his engagement to – you know, to basketball as that's been his reputation for the 5 years prior to this. So if there's statements I want to retract of my own this year, it's that, you know, I really believe that part of Andrew was going away, and it hasn't. There's an inconsistent level from him of commitment to the game, to his credit. And, you know, last night shows as a specific example that those two things exist in the first half and the second half. Like, the second half is good. It's really good. This offense can be dynamic when him and Karl-Anthony Towns are running the high pick and roll up top there. He's hard to stop going to the rim. And Cat is just about impossible to guard at the top of the key for a center. So it's just the question exists. And as long as that question exists, we don't know where this team can go.
Yeah, and I think that's the most frustrating part of this, right, is that you look at the box score, and obviously, you know, you have to watch a game. You can't just look at the box score in a lot of these cases because context matters. But you look at Andrew's final line.
No, box score was pretty telling last night. Box score told the story last night for Andrew Wiggins.
Well, but it's interesting. It's like you look at his final line, and it's, okay, 25 points, 10 of 19 shooting, 4 of 10 from 3, 5 rebounds, 9 assists. You know what I mean?
I thought you were talking about first half, second half.
Right.
The first half, he had 3 points, missed both his free throws, didn't grab a single rebound.
Right.
And that told the story. And then the second half, he drops 22, has 6 assists and 5 rebounds. That also told the story. So,
right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, like that. Like that's the most frustrating part, is because you look at the total result and it's like, oh, okay, Andrew had a pretty good game. He had 9 assists, 25 points, but then that goes back to the context part. If you didn't watch the game, you don't realize that he was absolutely atrocious in the first half, and a lot of that production that we saw in the totals pretty much all came in the second half of the game, and that's the frustrating part, because then you look at the totals and it's like, okay, well, how much stock can you really put in it, because he didn't really put together a complete 48-minute basketball game.
Well, bottom of the line, if he doesn't, given the lack of talent on this roster that surrounds him outside of Towns and Covington, if he doesn't give them the energy required, then they're going to lose.
Yep.
I mean, it's that simple, because the offense is so predicated on his Robin role to cast Batman. It's too big of a role for him to be lethargic. And if he's lethargic, I mean, bottom of the line, they're going to lose. They're on a 7-game losing streak, because January from Wiggins has broadly been lethargic.
How do you view this losing streak as a whole right now? Because it's been a tough schedule. They had the home and home with Indiana. You had Oklahoma City in there. Houston. I mean, how do you view, in terms of just how they've played during this losing streak? I mean, last night aside, I mean, what's your overall viewpoint on just how they have looked, despite the fact that they haven't won in what feels like 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, I think the last time they played well was that Portland game, and Wiggins played well in that game too. I think he had 23, and you know, the offense was zipping. Granted, the Blazers were on like the fifth game of a 5-game road trip, but it looked good. Since then, they've been losing, and it's because I mean, on both ends, it's gone away. They were, you know, when Wiggins and Towns were out, they were really relying on the defense sparking them. And it was. The offense was bad, obviously, without Wiggins and Towns. But they were playing a committed, physical, in-your-face defense. And they were executing the scheme. And it was working. So these last 7 games, like, we have these offensive pops. Not consistent offense, but offensive pops.
Yeah.
Or individual offensive pops. But it's not, you can't expect great defense and offense for all 48 minutes, but you can't just have these extended lapses of, you know, of neither. And I think that's what's killing them, and they're struggling to reacclimate, you know, Towns back into the scheme. I mean, he has 40 last night on 16 of 24 shooting, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's a minus 7. He's the only starter who got outscored when he was on the floor. I mean, I know that's just one game, but those are empty stats then. I mean, they just definitively are.
With them on defense, and I mean, obviously, and I know that you've talked about this on this podcast, you know, in recent weeks, but obviously, you know, much has been made about, you know, the splits between how this team has performed defensively when Cat's been on the floor, and how they perform defensively when he missed basically a month before he came back against the Pacers. And obviously, I don't think you can put the entire thing on Cat, even though the numbers would make someone want to do that. But I guess my question is, okay, Cat has to play. He's the best player on the team. He's one of the best offensive players in the NBA. You have to play him, and you have to play him a lot. So how does this team improve defensively with him on the floor? Because obviously when he's not on the floor, the defense may appear to be better, but then they suffer offensively. So how is this team going to be able to find this balance of being able to put this all together? Because Cat, obviously, I mean, it goes without saying, he has to play.
I think, as you said, the narrative is a little out of control,
yeah,
mostly fueled by those numbers that are just ridiculous. It's like they're giving up 115 points per 100 possessions with him on the floor and 100 with him off. I mean, this year, which is, that's a ridiculous discrepancy. I don't think that tells a fair story, because what I see out of Karl Anthony Towns is solid to good defense, actually a lot of the time. It's the instances and the stretches when it's bad that are so egregious that they just lead to, it's the over pursuit that leads to a layup, or it's an over pursuit that leads to a swing wide open corner three. It's those bouts where he isn't just being solid in the ways that Gordon Jang is, that I think it adds up in the aggregate. Because if you're watching every one of these games, Cat is not like categorically awful at defense every single possession. There are just things that he does 4, 5, 6, 7 times in the game that lead to free points. And a lot of the times it's about mental engagement, running back on defense, knowing what his duty is, dropping back, being able to read the rotations. Those things happen, and they're compounding negatives.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the tough part, because, watching last night's game, there was a stretch in the first half. There was a sequence in the first half where Covington missed a three. The Bulls get the rebound, and Cat is sort of like, he's not, I don't want to say he's jogging back, but he's not really sprinting back. And I think it was Luke Kornet he's flying up the floor. And then the next thing you know, I think it might have been LaVine or somebody, I can't remember who threw him the lob, but it's like in 3 seconds, it was like bang. After the Covington miss, it's like 3 seconds later, boom, lob to Kornet for the dunk. And it's just frustrating, because then you see Cat like at the end of, trailing back at the end of that play, and it's like, Cat, you gotta floor it a little bit. Like you gotta sprint back. You can't, you gotta go. I mean, if especially off of a miss like that, the Bulls are gonna push the ball. You gotta get back, and that's kind of the frustrating part. And it's not something that, like you said, it's like those things end up making it seem like Cat's like the worst defender on the planet. But like you said, he's done some pretty good things on that end of the floor. He hasn't been as terrible maybe as the numbers show. And I guess it's just, how do you get to the point where those sort of lapses just don't happen anymore? That's the frustrating part.
You're 100% right, Manny. I mean, it's that play, that specific play you're talking about, LaVine, Oop to Kornet, but, is inspirational to the Bulls. I mean, Luke Kornet is thrown into that game because Wendell Carter's out, and now he's starting and he's defending Karl Anthony Towns as his matchup for the night. You get him going a little bit, and he's got a little, there's just a little bit more pep in his step.
He's going to start feeling himself a little bit.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about, that compounding, where that's just one possession, but it's not just one possession. You know what I mean? It rolls up into something bigger, and I think that's where those numbers blow up, is because it changes the way the opponent feels, the next possession and the possession after that, once they're getting a couple of easy things. And I think that's just what it is with Karl, is too many times the opponent gets an easy bucket. Even though there's other times where he's solid, too many times it's just those easy buckets where he just looked, he had a mental lapse.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and you just hope to see it improve. I mean, with Andrew, going back to Andrew here very quickly, I mean, how do you think he has performed? And again, last night aside, last night was just basically two different games that Andrew played. But on the defensive end of the floor, how do you think Andrew has progressed overall this season?
He has progressed there. I mean, to be fair to him, I think David Vanterpool, the Wolves' associate head coach and defensive coordinator, has gotten through to him, and the importance there. There are it's not just engagement in his one-on-one matchup that I think has improved. That's what we would always talk about. You're like, well, what's Wiggins doing over there on the perimeter? His hands are in his pocket, and he's standing straight up and down.
Right.
It's far less of that. And what I think is even more encouraging is how he's reading off the ball. I mean, the Wolves got beat. You brought up Indiana. They got beat, twice in a row against them. And what how Indiana was killing them was with, you know, they're just running that Brogdon-Sabonis pick and roll over and over again.
Right.
And it ultimately undid the Wolves. But I thought it was encouraging to see, you know, Wiggins recognize that, you know, that's what's beating us. And to be, you know, the help defender that's coming in to try and, you know, prevent that roll pass to Sabonis and read it. And there was, in the game in Minnesota, it was better. He got there and he forced them into, you know, needing to look away from that action, which is their best action. So there are times, there's the outline of an improving defender. I don't think it's fair to say that he is maximizing his physical capabilities on that end, but I mean, to me, he was clearly a minus defender in previous seasons, and I wouldn't say that he's definitely not a minus defender in the context of this team, which is just kind of generally bad at defense.
What's your overall view on where this team is at now? I guess what, 44 games into the season, a little bit over halfway into the season now, versus where you thought, or at least what your initial thoughts were of them before the season started. I mean, obviously the 7-4 start, I think the 7-4 and 10-8 start, I think had a lot of people really maybe a little bit overzealous in, you know, what they thought the end result of the season would be. But taking your thoughts on where the season would go before it started, and now fast forward 44 games, you know, how much of your viewpoint on this team is different from what it was in, let's say, early October?
You know, I think I was generally speaking more of a believer in this team, not necessarily making the playoffs, but I thought that I knew they were going to really commit to in a cat-centric offense that, and I believed that they were going to get this guy who can shoot over 40% from three. 8-9 looks from deep, and they were going to run the offense through him. And I thought that that would be a really impactful piece to the offense and thus the overall effectiveness of the team. I think what's proven to be true, similar to those defensive numbers that paint him as the worst defender ever, I actually think the offensive numbers overrate his impact. I'm not saying he doesn't have an excellent offensive skill set, but like, okay, so ESPN's real plus minus, Cat's number one in offensive real plus minus by a mile, and he's amongst centers, and he's last amongst defensive real plus minus amongst centers by a mile.
Yeah.
I think both are actually somewhere more in between, and if he isn't the most impactful offensive center in the league, as I believe he isn't, then I think the externality of that is overall this offense isn't as good. I don't think the impact of him, he's making those threes, he's getting those threes, he's getting his points. Like we said, he had 40 last night on 24 shots. But that hasn't like resonated through the roster in a way that boosts this offense to what I thought it would be that would make this team a team that wins in the high 30s. Instead, you know, they're tracking to be like a 30-win team. And obviously Cat missing a bunch of time and Wiggins too has had an impact. But I think when we're talking about, you know, just like in a vacuum basketball-wise, what I overrated was how good this offense would be. I thought they had like a floor of being a top 10 offense. And they just haven't had that because Cat's impact hasn't like spread out through all the five guys on the floor.
And that's the interesting part because, you know, earlier today I was reading Zach Lowe's piece on, you know, Zach, he laid out, you know, who his all-star teams were going to be. And he had excluded Cat largely because, you know, his reasoning was, you know, Cat had missed too many games. And Cat, you know, Cat's missed 17 games, I think, total this year. But then he laid out the team's win-loss record with Cat versus without him.
Yep.
And it was really interesting because the Wolves are, so they're 15-29 as of this recording. They're 6-11 without him, and they're 9-18 with him. And yep. Obviously you don't really want to look at these things in a vacuum overall, but then at the same time it's like, and then you look at last night's game where Cat, the numbers are there, he has 40 points, and then they still end up losing by 7. I mean, it's that's really kind of the frustrating part because You would think with how good Cat is offensively that it would impact this team's ability to win a lot more than it has. And I'm kind of lost for words on where this franchise can go if he's not having enough of an impact on winning. I don't know where they can go, Dane. I mean, obviously, we knew at the when the season started, we knew that this team was not going to be a playoff team. Everybody knew that. But I think what we're seeing now is that they need to find another star to pair with Carl Anthony Towns. And the tough thing is with where they're at financially and the cap situation and everything, and I don't know how good this upcoming draft is going to be. It's hard to think that star, unless they can pull off a magical trade, it's hard to imagine that star being, coming with to be with this team anytime soon.
Well, that's the ultimate question, right? If you're Gerson Rosas in the front office, how obviously they're building something that's going to take years to come to fruition, even if they build it perfect. And the fundamental question is, are we building a team for Carl Anthony Towns to be the number one option, or are we building a team for Carl Anthony Towns to be a 1A/1B guy?
Right.
And I think we're loading up some evidence this year that, yes, he doesn't have good teammates around him, but he's clearly the number one on this team, and they've lost 11 straight games that he's played in.
Man.
That's an indictment of that past to some degree, right?
Like, yeah.
So I don't know. I think with all the data points we have, the theory that says Cat's probably got to be your 1B is only getting stronger. Now, how do you go find that 1A? That's a really hard question, because now we're dealing with the time frame of, do we go into the draft that everyone's saying is bad and try and find a guy there? I don't know. You really want to roll a dice on that and grab a 19-year-old who might be Ja Morant, but he also might be Darius Garland or Kevin Knox or something like
right.
that. I mean, if you miss on that, then what? Then another year goes, another couple years goes by, and you're looking to make another move. You're looking to reshuffle the deck again. Well, then before you know it, Cat's deal's up, and you've lost 1B as well. So, I mean, my personal stance is it time to get aggressive? Like, whether it's at this trade deadline or this summer, I love what Robert Covington has to offer, but if he's that chip, and if the goal is ultimately like a championship and to be a real contender, then and he's your only path to getting that, because like you said, there's limited other just assets on this team. Like, I'm not heavily, prioritizing this lottery pick that they're going to have this year. I think you take a real good look at moving Covington and that lottery pick at whatever other young pieces on the roster you have, Culver, Okogie, et cetera. And if something lines up, within a reasonable degree, you take that shot. Now, me, Manny, we've talked about this before. I don't think that's D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
And I don't know what the other answer is. So that's why it's kind of like it's a constant assessment, in my opinion. But ultimately, I don't like the wait around and see path, because that gets scary for the Wolves fast on a whole bunch of different levels.
Yeah, and I'm with you on D'Angelo Russell. I like D'Angelo Russell, but I think with what we're seeing from him and what we have seen this year from the Wolves, I just don't think adding him – I mean, okay, if you can pull off a deal and get him, okay, that's fine, but – like that's
then who is the other guy? Then you need the other guy too.
Yeah, because that's right? Just not enough. Like, D'Angelo Russell is not going to be enough to get this team going in the right direction. So that's the frustrating
part. We're really underestimating D'Angelo Russell, but I think a lot of smart people share your assessment there. We're like, D'Lo's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player, but a good player plus, what we're learning about this Cat being like. That doesn't seem like enough at all. Not even to mention getting into the whole idea of, shoving D'Lo in a square peg into the round hole next to Wiggins as well in the backcourt.
Right.
That wouldn't work.
Yeah. All right. Last thing before we get out of here, obviously you were at the United Center last night covering the game. So I don't know how much of Zion Williamson you got to see, because that game went a little bit later beyond the Wolves and Bulls. But I don't know how much of Zion you got to see, if you got to see any of them at all. What were your impressions?
So I had the game up on my computer while the game was going on, so I kind of only saw the first half, and even, you know, sparsely. But I thought the irony was just so thick as I'm sitting there watching Andrew Wiggins start popping off, and former first overall pick Andrew Wiggins start popping off in the second quarter, right once everybody's turned off their TVs turned off the Wolves game to turn on Zion, this year's first overall pick, and Wiggins starts playing well, and no one's watching anymore. And I mean, Zion's just seems like the real deal. I'm going to go back and watch that fourth quarter specifically, but from what I've been able to gather from the clips and highlights I've seen, he's just a fascinating character, right? Yeah. Like that body, with unprecedented athleticism, funky kind of looking jump shot. It's like, are we totally sure this guy fits in the modern NBA like perfectly? But then you're like, he's still seems unstoppable. It's just going to be, I mean, for me, every single time, you know, I'm at home and a Pelicans game is on, I'm trying to turn them on League Pass. And I think that's what everyone's going to be doing, because he's just kind of a must-see ticket right now. What did you watch it a little bit closer?
Yeah, I watched it a little bit closer after the Wolves game was over, and I sort of caught the tail end of the Pelicans and Spurs. But from what I saw, I mean, that 2.5, 3-minute stretch in the fourth quarter, when I think he ended up scoring like 17 straight points for them. I mean, it was just off the charts, Dane. I mean, I'm like, this guy is shooting threes. Now, you know, how much of that is going to continue, I don't know, because that's kind of the big question mark with him was how his jump shot was going to. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, he took them with no hesitation, and it was great. Yeah. And then you see him run the floor, and this guy, Dane, has floor vision that – a guy that we've never really seen, a guy that size. I mean, obviously, you know, LeBron is LeBron, but LeBron and Zion are different in terms of size and body build and everything like that. They're different guys. And to see this guy play with this sort of energy and be as good a passer as he is, and I mean, he's just relentless. And you combine that with the physical talents that he has. I mean, I was blown away just by I've never seen 3 minutes of basketball like that from a guy playing in his first game in the NBA. Now, obviously, the first half was, you know, the first half you just kind of forget about it because he just didn't really get a chance to get into a rhythm, and he's seeing real NBA action for the first time in his life. I mean, but that fourth quarter, man, I was just blown away. I was just flabbergasted by what I was watching. And you're right, man. It's gonna be that he's gonna be like the hottest ticket in town. I mean, it's just I don't know what else to say. I mean, he was just unbelievable.
What if he gets more physically imposing?
Right.
Like
he's 19.
That's what normally happens.
He's 19, Dane.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like I watch Ja Morant, right? And that's what starts going through my head when I'm watching Ja Morant play. I'm like, this kid's a string bean, like. What if he adds some strength to his frame and he doesn't every single time have to try and like get around guys? He can go through them. Like we're all baking in, you know, physical growth to Jaw. Like, are we sure that Zion like won't get stronger or like at least in better shape? Like, I think that's the bet to make. And he's already so physically imposing as is. I mean, my favorite thing is when he grabs an offensive rebound under the hoop, and he takes this like power dribble flying sidestep from like one block to the other.
Yep.
And it clears out everyone in the lane, and then he just dunks it. I've never seen the combination of lateral explosiveness like that under the hoop with vertical explosiveness. How do you defend that without fouling? I mean, it's just like Giannis going north-south, right? Like, how do you defend that without fouling? And he's going to be an absolute nightmare when he's rolling. I don't think there's really any doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just scary to think about what he's going to look like when he's 24, 25 years old, and he's got 5 years, 5-6 years of NBA basketball under his belt, man. I mean, it's going to be incredible. And obviously, he has to stay healthy, and you know, obviously the meniscus surgery and all that stuff that he had to get, you know, that I can see how that can raise some eyebrows. But man, I mean, just if he reaches his full potential, if he's able to stay healthy, it's going to be he's going to be scary, man. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch. So
March 8th at Target Center.
Yeah.
Matinee.
Yeah, get your tickets now.
we might have our first sellout of the year.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Dane, good stuff, man. And we will catch up with you next week in studio. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, find Dane Moore on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. You can follow him there. And you can follow me at MannyHill84. You can find this podcast on Apple, Spotify, Podcast One, ScoreNorth.com, ScoreNorth mobile app, wherever you find podcasts. And you can subscribe and give us a friendly rating. Let us know what you think. And that'll be about it for this edition of Raised by Wolves. Thanks for listening. For Dane Moore, I'm Manny Hill, and we will talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.